This is always the best time of the week, and it is definitely a Monday, but I think my Monday has been so good, I couldn't even tell it was Monday. Hello, everybody. This is your friend CL King coming to you live from the High Definition Studios here in Jacksonville, North Carolina, the Impacting Life virtual studios here in the base called Camp Lejeune. This is the home of the Marine Corps base Camp Lejeune. You know, folks, I can tell you this, that I have had so many folks on our show from so many wide varying backgrounds that it truly is almost like Christmas every Monday night, Tuesday night, and Thursday night. I think it's Christmas for you all because you guys never know who I'm going to bring on the show. I always try to lead with a little suspense, lead with a little bit of intrigue, and say, okay, what is the CL King staff up to next? Well, tonight I talked with my friend that's going to be on with us in just a moment. I talked with him several weeks ago about this topic that has really intrigued me. Why has it intrigued me? Because it can affect all of us. The topic we're going to talk tonight about is obesity. That's right. We're going to talk about it. We're not going to run from it. We're not going to sugarcoat it. We're going to actually talk about it. And why are we going to talk about it? Because the truth of the matter is that talking with this friend of mine, this world-renowned doctor, it has actually opened my eyes to some things about even how I need to conduct myself. Now, I know some of you out there are automatically going to find another podcast to turn into tonight because these topics can be a tad bit difficult. You know, I have people in my live studio audience that make faces at me, so as they're eating their chips and ice cream. But the truth of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, that we have within our power to make some dynamic shifts. We have within our power to make some dynamic changes, and it very well may be small changes, but it can be for the benefit of our longevity. And so I am welcoming to our virtual studios a man that's well-traveled and well-experienced in the topic of obesity. He's my friend, Dr. Aviskar. Now, I call him Dr. Aviskar because he's allowed me to, and that's his first name. I'm just really, really bad at doing his last name, so I'll let him tell you guys his last name. But Dr. Aviskar, he hails from a background that a lot of people very well may avoid. And I really want you guys to listen in tonight because we're going to ask some questions. If you guys are on with us live in our live audience, you guys can ask questions. I'll be sure to ask the doctor. He is not just a PhD, ladies and gentlemen. He is an MD. So we didn't just bring a PhD out here tonight. We said, listen, doctor, we need an MD in the house. Is there a doctor in the house? And we're so blessed to have our great friend, obesity expert, Dr. Aviskar. Welcome, doctor.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much. This is such an honor.
It is an honor for me, too. I feel like me and you just have been friends for years, you know?
I know.
It's like when Dr. Aviskar and I talk off camera. I mean, we're talking for 30 minutes before you guys see us, and it's just like, man, we're just talking about everything under the sun, you know? So, doctor, we're very, very blessed to have you with us, and we're very thankful for you to be a part of our show. I know you're very busy. I've seen some of the shows that you've been on. Dr. Aviskar is requested all across the country and around the world, ladies and gentlemen. He was just on a show in, where were you at, the lady we just said?
Australia.
So the doctor is very, very busy, and so he was so busy he had to actually reschedule us to get to this date because he just got so many requests for his services and his skill set. And so we're very, very thankful, very appreciative of you, doctor. So, doctor, can you please tell us, before we get into all the details and all the nitty gritty and all the heavy stuff about tonight, talk to us about how people can find Dr. Aviskar.
So people can actually find me on my website called www.decodingobesity.com. Decoding Obesity is the name of my podcast, so the website is named after that. So it's pretty straightforward. Otherwise, they can find me on Facebook, Instagram, or on Twitter. My handle is DocTorSabharwal. So that's my last name, doctor, followed by my last name, Dr. Sabharwal. And they can find me there, or they can find me on LinkedIn.
Dr. Sabharwal, was that closer? Was that better? Was I there? No?
You're getting there. You're getting there. One day. One day.
Look, I've already booked the doctor to come back to talk to us before Christmas in the holiday season. So I'll practice again before I have you back, doctor. So anyway, where are you at in the region of the world right now, doctor?
I'm in New Jersey.
In New Jersey, but obviously your journey has brought you from a long way. So tell us a little bit. Tell our audience, because we have a vast audience. People listen to this show with all varying degrees of backgrounds. So tell us a little bit, doctor, about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
So yeah, that's an interesting journey I've had, and quite a journey. I started my medical training actually in India. And I did my medical school in India. I came here, did some research, went back to India. I did my residency in internal medicine in India. And really at that point in time, I know we're talking about obesity, so I'm just going to talk about, you know, how I got interested in obesity. I myself have suffered from it since time immemorial. I don't even know, since I was young. But when I was doing my residency in India, I reached my heaviest weight. And what ended up happening was that I decided that something needed to change. And all I knew, despite my training in medicine and everything, was that I probably should just change my lifestyle. So I did that. I changed my lifestyle around. I started eating healthier. Actually, interestingly, I had tried multiple times before that to lose the weight. I would lose a few pounds and I would just gain it back. But this time I was like, I need to really do something that's going to be long-term, that I can stick to. And so I changed my lifestyle around, and what ended up happening was I did lose a bunch of weight, and that was basically eating healthier, eating cleaner, and exercising a lot. And and so I lost the weight. I was able to keep it off because I was able to maintain my lifestyle. But once that happened, that really piqued my interest in obesity itself. And honestly, I did not even know that obesity medicine was a separate kind of a specialty that was there. So what happened was I just happened to Google it, and there it was. I saw obesity medicine as a specialty. And so I wanted to kind of specialize in this and see what's out there. What does science tell us about it? Because honestly, in my training in India also, I did not learn much about it. And so when I reached out to people here for training in obesity medicine, they said, well, you have to be trained in medicine over here before you can, or board certified in medicine over here before you can actually get certified in obesity medicine. So that's not the reason why I moved to the US, but it so happened that I ended up coming here, and I decided to pursue it further. And so I got certified in obesity medicine, and really learning about it opened my eyes to the world of obesity medicine and the science. And not only that, once I read about the science of obesity medicine, I could reflect back and see how I had the decisions that I had made were kind of sort of scientific, even though I did not know about it. And I'm sure people who've changed their lifestyles around would feel the same way. But there was still science about it. There was still science behind it in the changes that I had made. But there was a lot more to it than, you know, just changing your diet and exercise and this and that.
Right. And, you know, I think we have heard a lot about, especially in the past year, we've heard a lot about respecting the science, listen to the science. And I think that you have tapped into, at least when we lay this foundation, because, you know, I'm just a layman. I'm nowhere near an MD. We've got to tap into the science behind this disease called obesity. Now, am I correct? Am I in error in calling it a disease?
No, it has been recognized as a disease by the World Health Organization. It is a chronic disease, and we need to recognize it as such.
Right. And so, you know, for those of us sometimes who are looking through the lens of judgment on folks, we have to remember that there's a whole lot more science going on than maybe there is laying on the couch eating potato chips, right?
Well, there's a science behind eating the chips on the couch as well.
They just taste so good, brother. Yeah, we were watching Coming to America the other night, and I couldn't get enough of them chips, baby. but that's true. And you know, I let me just put this disclaimer out there right now for everyone who is listening to our podcast, as well as those watching us live. Obviously, I have Dr. Avishkar on Impacting Life with us. He is a board certified doctor. He has MD after his name. But of course, you cannot take our show exclusively and say, I garnered medical information on this show that told me to go in one direction or another. You are always supposed to do what? Check with your health professional. Okay, so don't come back and try to get with me and Dr. Avishkar and say, y'all told me to do. No. Not on this show. These are just the opinions of the doctor and CL King, but you must consult with your medical professional, okay? But I do bring people on the show for this reason, because Dr. Avishkar has impacted many, many lives with telling people about the journey, his journey in particular. So at your heaviest, you had tried different diets in the past, yeah. And what was it that clicked for you? What was the change, bro?
So what I thought was, at that point in time, I was eating a lot of processed food, ultra processed food. So what I thought was that, well, let me cut that out of my diet. And also let me cut out the added sugar. So that was a big change for me. I think sugar plays such a detrimental role in our society and in our health that it's unbelievable. And really, when I cut out sugar completely, and I did cut it out cold turkey, I did not experience any withdrawal symptoms per se. It wasn't like I was having shakes and chills and whatever. Sometimes people do experience that. People mention that they experience it. I never experienced any of that. But what I did notice was that after a while, I couldn't care less for anything sweet. So it wasn't that I was craving anything sweet, but when I was actually eating, consuming sugar, I would always crave for something sweet. Particularly after a meal or whatever, I would want something sweet in my mouth. Right. So now I had replaced it with fruits. Now fruits do have natural sugars in them, but they have so much more to them than just the added sugar, than just the sugar. They don't have any added sugar. So really cutting out that sugar did make a big difference in the way I was eating. And then secondly, what I did was I was able to cook a lot at home. So I was eating everything home cooked, essentially. I had a rule that if I needed to eat anything, that would be cooked at home. Wow. So even if it were a pizza, I was making it from scratch, not buying the pizza base from outside. I was making it from scratch at home. And then because I could really control the ingredients that were going into it.
You know, you bring up something interesting. Greg says, I love M&Ms. And I'm just saying hello to our online. Greg is my VP. He says, I love M&Ms. So I'm just saying hello to my online audience. Hello, Mike. And thank you, Greg, for putting the doctor's website out there. If you'd like to connect with Dr. Avishkar, you can contact him at decodingobesity.com. And that's exactly what we're talking about tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is decoding this plague and this disease called obesity. And Greg's not obese, thank goodness, but he does like M&Ms. Now, talking about sugars, because you bring up a great point. You talked about how you did include fruits, which are natural sugars. But now all of these other things that are saying sugar-free and light sugar and no sugar added, but they're still processed off of the shelf. They're not fruits. How do you feel about those?
So that's, I think they're lesser of the two evils, I would say.
Yeah, right, right.
but you know, if you talk about sugar-free or no added sugar and having these artificial sweeteners, data does suggest that, especially with, you know, the artificially sweetened beverages and whatever, they are better and they're helpful in terms of fighting the weight. So there is data to support their use. It's not like they're completely useless.
Right.
But if you can just stay away from all sugars, then that's great. If you cannot, then, you know, these sweeteners are probably okay, unless you have some specific situation where you're not able to use the sweeteners. But I would say just, I would say the main problem is with the added sugar. And even in the added sugar, I know the high fructose corn syrup has been vilified a lot. But really, if you look at the high fructose corn syrup and the regular cane sugar, the percentage is about the same. So high fructose corn syrup has like 55% fructose and 45% glucose. But the regular cane sugar has 50% glucose and 50% fructose. So just by saying that, you know, it's high fructose corn syrup is worse than cane sugar doesn't really make a difference. It's about really reducing the amount of sugar that you're consuming. And it's, and organic is not better than regular cane sugar. The body doesn't differentiate between that. Honey, maple syrup are no better than regular cane sugar in terms of
sugar is sugar, right?
Sugar is sugar as far as how the body recognizes it. So,
well, let me ask you this, doctor, and I'm just making sure that our online audience is doing okay over there. You guys who just tuned in, you're tuning in to Impacting Life 24/7 with your host, CL King. And of course, I got multiple screens here, so I have to look away from time to time. But do not think that I'm ignoring you, my live audience. And you, we have with us Dr. Vishkar, and you can reach him at decodingobesity.com. Tell him your whole name, Dr. Vishkar.
My whole name is Dr. Avishkar Sabharwal.
Yes, and me and him have become even closer friends because I just can't say his last name. he said, man, maybe I should have just been called Dr. Smith. I said, you know, we could have solved world hunger right there, brother. So, doctor, one of the questions that was submitted to me that I wanted to ask you is on the topic of obesity and self-image, okay? Have you encountered individuals who have been affected negatively because they have identified too closely to their body's appearance? And if so, is that a hindrance that needs to be addressed up front, or is it allowed to happen naturally?
I think that's a very, very important question that you're asking in about self-image, because the way the society portrays obesity is not good. It's not appropriate. We are expected to look a certain way, and this is what we call the weight bias that exists in the society. You'll see it everywhere. Right. You see any fashion magazine or whatever, you'll see lean, sometimes actually underweight models.
Right.
So thinness is kind of portrayed as being the right thing, but being undernourished is not good either. So you have to be at a healthy weight.
Right.
So a lot of times that can lead to a lot of despondency in people, in patients with obesity. And that does happen. So it really needs to be addressed up front. And the way you address it is kind of making people understand that there is still hope, there is help. And it may not necessarily be all of it may not necessarily be your fault. Of course, there are certain choices that you can make that will help you, but there are a lot of things that may not necessarily be in your control. And so that's important to understand that there is a lot more that's going on into this. I'll give you an example. We just talked about M&Ms, right? Somebody just loves M&Ms.
Greg does. Yes, he does.
Well, let's just tease that out. Let's see what's the science behind that person liking M&Ms. Mm-hmm. So A, it's marketed that way, right? B, it has a lot of sugar, which is addictive in itself. There are studies to support that, sugar is almost more addictive than cocaine. There's data from rats that showed that basically sugar was really, really addictive.
Right.
So sugar is very addictive. And see, there are naturally added flavors that can also enhance the addictive potential of the food product itself. So there are a lot of cues that are happening that may cause you to, and I'm not saying this is particularly for M&Ms, of course, it can be for any food for that matter.
Right.
But usually we see it with ultra processed foods. So any ultra processed foods for that matter, I would say it's nothing in particular. I have nothing against M&Ms.
Right. It's just yes. Don't let the M&M company come sue us now, doctor. That's
great. I have nothing against M&Ms. I do enjoy an M&M or two once in a while.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But yeah, so all ultra processed foods, they in a way can cause you to, kind of seek those foods much more than the healthier foods. So there's a science behind that. There's a reason why people are consuming more ultra-processed foods than they are consuming the unprocessed foods or minimally processed foods.
Well, let me ask you this, because you bring up a good point about, you know, processed foods and such. And I do recall, I was looking for my notes here. You know, I'm just so disheveled. I have to do everything off the top of my head. One thing that I do recall every time we go out to eat, doctor, is that after we're finished and we're almost bloated and they've got to wheel us from the table, you know the question they always ask, doctor? Do you have room for dessert? And you almost feel guilty by saying, no, I think we're... And then you really, every time, it's always a wrestling match in my mind, like, well, maybe I could make a little room for dessert. My body's telling me I need to have it. So sugar is a powerful element, huh?
Right. And it's not just physical, right? It's a lot of it is mental. So you're talking about a mental struggle that's occurring within your mind. You may not realize it, but that's what it's doing to you. That's what sugar does, right? It's causing you to kind of change your thought process or justify an action that you're going to take. And that's what happens with a lot of addictions as well, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true, doctor. So when we look at the science of obesity, and, you know, because we have a show that reaches from coast to coast and around the world, obviously there could be someone that may not even know what is considered obese. So since you're a board certified physician, especially with an emphasis in this background, what is considered obese in a person?
So obesity is usually defined, what we commonly use is the BMI, mm-hmm. To define obesity. What we understand obesity is a disease of the fat cells or the fat tissue. It's the unhealthy fat that a person carries. Usually we use BMI commonly to define obesity. So BMI above 30 is considered obese. And that's specific for population. For example, in the American population, we'll talk about 30. It's different for Asian population because they're shorter, they're a little leaner. So it varies from race to race. That's the most common, most easily available tool to us. But there are other ways you can measure it. You can measure the fat percentage. For example, you may have bioimpedance scales that you can use to kind of see what their exact fat percentage is. And you can sometimes even do a DEXA scan. So DEXA scan is kind of the most accurate measure of the body fat percentage. So body fat percentage above 25% in men and above 32% in women is considered to be in the obesity range.
Wow. And there's, okay, so help us just so we know, kind of walk us through. There's what you would call an average person or, you know, healthy on target. And then is there like moderate obese? And then I thought I heard something about morbid obese or something. What's the various stages?
So that's based on the BMI cutoffs that we use. And we've kind of gone shy away from the word morbid now. We kind of call them severely obese. So that's... So, BMI of 30 to 35 is stage one obesity.
Right.
35 to 40 is stage two, and 40 and above is stage three.
This is so good. Why I do this show live, Mike? You heard your Mike Black, my friend. He's one of my co-hosts on here. So there is hope for us, brother. He said there's no term called morbid obesity anymore. I'm just thinking about him and I at Planet Fitness struggling, trying to sweat to the oldies. So, and that's fine. Here's what I feel. And you talked about this, and I think we talked about this in the pre-show today, that you were very deliberate in your weight loss journey. Like, you know, you started weighing your food talk to us about that.
So when I did my weight loss regimen, I was very, very particular about what I was eating. I was actually weighing, I had a kitchen scale. Now, you may not necessarily need to do that. What's important is food journaling, because there's data to support that. that food journaling does help with weight loss as well. Mm. So what I was doing was food journaling, but I was taking it to the extreme where I was actually weighing the amount of food that I was eating and what type of food I was eating. And I was logging in the exact amount of calories. We do talk about, you know, there's this always this debate about calories, calories in, calories out. In fact, I did a show on this as well in my podcast. So calories are important, but they're not the whole story. There's a lot more to it. Because when you talk about calories, what ends up happening is you're just looking at the energy a particular food is supposedly giving. And why I say supposedly is because whenever you consume something, you don't consume 100% of it, mm-hmm. right? So you're going to have some of it is consumed, some of how it's absorbed, some of it you're going to defecate out, which is obviously also has some of the carbon that was there in, I'm getting very science here, but some of the, the carbon and whatever that's there in the food, and that itself is also energy. So how much of it is absorbed is very variable from person to person. So it really does vary. So something that says 100 calories may not necessarily give you 100 calories.
Right.
It may give you less or, you know, compared to somebody else, or it may give you more compared to somebody else. But yeah, so having said that, so they are still important because obviously you cannot try to lose weight on a 5,000, 10,000 calorie diet if you're not able to kind of, you know, your metabolic rate is not that high or whatever.
Right.
Unless you're Michael Phelps. So exactly. That's different.
Now,
so,
when we talk about metabolism, and I'm assuming you've got some experience in metabolic, the whole metabolic world. Some people say, and I've even felt this at times in my life, that like, oh my goodness, my metabolism has just absolutely come to a screeching halt. You know, after I turned 40, it felt like, you know, everything that I ate turned into a scale adjustment. You know, so, yeah. Talk to me about that. Help me, brother.
So yeah, you're right. I think as we age, things change. There we kind of start accumulating a little more fat in our body, we start losing the lean mass. It does happen. So our metabolism does change. Our body does change. The way we go through something called sarcopenia as we age. So really after the age of, I think, 30 or something, we start kind of losing our muscle cells. So that's your peak is the 20s to 20 to early 30s probably is your peak when you're kind of having the most muscle mass. And following that, it's a downhill trend that you see. Wow. So yeah, it does happen and it becomes a little difficult. So things change as you age. I mean, the body changes.
So having that's a great, listen, ladies and gentlemen, again, this is CL King with my great friend, Dr. Avishkar. And you can find him at decodingobesity.com. He's a board certified MD that specializes in obesity and a whole host of other medical things. He's just a brilliant gentleman who's really down to earth that you can just talk to as a normal person. But you just talked about this, that's very important. I think we need to key in on this. Okay. That the older we get, right? And if we don't have a rolling start into our health and wellness, do you feel, doctor, that it is more difficult, especially as you age, to say, okay, well, I'm just not going to, here's why I'm asking you that. Because some people have said, well, I'm just going to eat in moderation, right? I'm going to eat all the wrong stuff, but I'm just going to eat it in moderation. And I never see those people get control of their health. Well, I'm only going to eat, you know, I'm only going to eat one plate of ribs and a side of coleslaw and potato salad. Then that's it for me. But I'm just like, okay, as we age, those interventions may have worked in our 20s and teens, but they won't work in your 40s and 50s, right?
That's true. And the other thing to understand is that, you know, the expectations and goals also have to change as we age. They may work for some people, like some people are super fit in their 70s or 80s, right?
Right.
But
right.
Some people are not. And that's where, you know, the genetic differences come into play as well as to how you're going to age. And really what we can do is we should try and eat as much healthy as possible. And you know, it was interesting. I did an episode on the USDA guidelines that just came out for the American population, and they talk about a good rule. And I think that's a good place to start. Now, I don't say that's a good. That's not the end. I think that's where you should start. They talk about an 85-15 rule. So I think a good place to start would be 85-15, wherein you're eating healthy 85% of the times, and 15% of the times you're giving yourself some room to kind of splurge on your calories or splurge on your whatever you're eating.
See, and let me just interject, because I know you'll remember, but I'll forget. Some people are just like absolutist. You know, they're absolutist. You know, they say, I don't know if that's a word, but I just made it up anyway for my studio audience. Some people will say, like in the low carb world, you know, there's a whole craze with the low carb. And some folks will say, well, I'll never go above 21. I will never do it. And not 7 days a week. I'll just do 21 carbs a day and that's it. But here's the deal. You just gave us an indication that 85, 80, whatever percent of the time you should be eating healthy, but we do give ourselves allowances to just relax a tad, right?
Well, I think,
or is that the wrong words?
I think it's important to understand. I think what you're talking about are probably two different things in my mind, at least.
Go ahead.
When you talk about, say, going on a very low carb diet or a ketogenic diet,
right?
The way I look at it is it's an intervention that you're doing. So it may be a medically necessary intervention at that point in time,
right,
where you need to be on a very low carb or a ketogenic diet. And it is, you know, there's data to support ketogenic diet in obesity and in weight loss. The problem is that if with a ketogenic diet, if you give yourself that leeway of 15%, you will not remain in that state of ketosis that you need to be in.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, but overall, if you talk about the overall transition, what I'm talking about is a transition phase.
Yeah.
So I think when you start a transition into something, say you're transitioning from a very high carb diet to a ketogenic diet, I would say you probably start with transitioning to a low carb diet.
Right.
And that's where I would say this rule would probably be handy is, you know, you're eating very low carb 85% of the times and 15% of the times you're giving yourself leeway. Now, again, it can be very variable for people. Some people just want to do it cold turkey, and that's absolutely fine.
Right.
Some people want to gradually ease their way into it, and that's absolutely fine. At the end of the day, it's not about what I say or what any physician says. It's about the person who's doing it, what's comfortable for them, and what can they do sustainably. Because really maintaining it for the long haul is what's important.
Right. And you know, we see folks join the bandwagon every December 31st, you know, we're cleaning out the refrigerator and we're saying this, I'm starting fresh, blah, blah, blah. And you're right. Everybody is different. Every person's body is different. And it's important for us to know and learn our bodies. I'm at the 9 o'clock hour. So just give me 1 second, doctor, because we've got to recognize our sponsors. That's something that we do every hour at 9 o'clock. So I want to recognize our gold sponsors tonight. Greg Smith, he's the author of 100 Simple Ways to Manage a Property and Evidence Room. I want you to get a copy of his new book. It's a bestseller. And you can reach out to Greg on Facebook at Gregory Smith, or you can find him on email at smithg1963@yahoo.com. Michelle Perry is also another gold sponsor. We're very thankful for her. She's the founder of the Successful Diligence Organization, LLC, and she's also the host of the Successful Diligence Podcast. She's a best-selling author and the author of The Pebble in My Shoe. And you can connect with Michelle and get a copy of her book at successfuldiligence.com. We got a couple more. Adrienne Barker, who will be on our show. She's a gold sponsor. She's the host of the Adrienne Barker Speaks podcast. She is a life coach and CEO of Professional Global Etiquette. Now, I want you to connect with her at professionalglobaletiquette.com. And last but not least, the CL King Group is a sponsor of Impacting Life 24/7. I also want to tell you guys how to become a sponsor. It's very simple. Just go to our website, clkingspeaker.com. And also, you guys can look on my Facebook page. We'll also have it up on our website soon. Check out our merch. We got some new merchandise, pretty amazing pants, cups, bags, magnets, masks. We got it all with Impacting Life 24/7 on it. So we rolling, baby. So just hook us up, hit us up, clkingspeaker.com. So back to my friend, Dr. Avishkar. And the reason why I don't call him by his last name, because I don't want to mess it up. I respect him so much that I'm doing him justice. So doctor, when we go into all of these scientific worlds, we have seen over the past year that everyone has been under the same umbrella, almost globally, doctor. And a lot of people have been forced to stay in the house, which has caused all different other peripheral issues, depression, anxiety, and such, which as an end result has caused people to eat more comfort foods. So during this time, have you seen that, people have, during times of testing and during times of challenge and during times of, like you see, COVID-19, is it more challenging for people to stick with the regimen of taking care of their health during a time like this? Because we've seen and heard statistics that people are out there not doing such, that they're eating kind of differently. The eating habits have changed. Have you seen that to be the case?
I think so too. I think, any stress in life can cause somebody to waver off their path, because there's a lot of cerebral work that's going on when you're trying to eat healthy and when you're trying to control these urges, because it's not easy. So let's not make it look easy, because it is not.
Right.
And so it's very easy to wear off your path when you have any stressor in life. And it's not just what we're facing as a world, as a global community, but any stressor in anybody's life. For example, if somebody's going through a divorce, somebody's had a breakup, somebody's had some major event in their life, somebody's moved from one place to another. It doesn't necessarily have to be something bad. It's just something good has happened and they've moved from one place to another. They found a very nice job and whatever, but settling in into that new place is going to take time. Finding a new routine is going to take time.
Right.
So, with us being at home, finding a new routine around your activities or around the way you're going to manage your work at home is going to be different now. Mm-hmm. So obviously all of this puts another additional strain on you to kind of figure out what you will need to do to get back to where you need to be. So it can be, it can be difficult, but it's something that you need to be cognizant of and kind of see how you can best manage it.
That's a great word that you use there. You said cognizant. Now, remember, I told you off show that, I have been known to, when I'm in my weight loss journey and I'm in, I got my headband on and my sweatbands and all this kind of stuff, and I'm just ready to do the Richard Simmons thing. I am like checking my weight every hour almost, I'm super cognizant of it. Now, let me just explain to my audience before you guys start throwing rotten tomatoes at me for why I did it. I do that because I wasn't checking my weight when I was eating unhealthy. I wasn't checking it when I was laying around slovenly around the house. I wasn't checking it. And then when I finally did, so much distance had gotten between where I want to be, right, and where I am, that it seemed almost impossible to get back to where I thought I was. I get up on the scale, I'm thinking, oh man, I'm going to be at least maybe 245. I get on that thing, I'm 273. There's a problem. And so when you say cognizant, I talked to you about this and this will be kind of a follow-up question, but it is a battle of the mind too, this whole obesity thing, right?
It is. I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that you were not checking your weight. I think it's also important to understand that what's going on in the subconscious mind when you're not actually checking your weight.
Okay.
Because sometimes it's your subconscious mind not wanting you to check the weight because you just fear what you're going to see on the scale.
I was afraid.
Right? So it's important to understand that. And you may find 10,000 excuses to kind of not do what you were wanting to do or what you should be doing. You might just say, well, I'm probably not there. And that's just your mind playing tricks on you. Just trying to not getting to the root of it when you're actually scared of seeing the number.
Right.
So that's one part of it. But it is important to have You know, checking your weight is one way of keeping yourself accountable, is the way I look at it.
Right.
It's an internal accountability. It's your sort of quote unquote accountability partner of sorts. Now, the weight may not always be the best gauge of your health or of your obesity, but it's something that you should do and something you can start with and something you can, you know, just have a bathroom scale. So you should definitely start with that. The important thing is not to overdo it because
don't be crazy like King, right?
Because the weight does vary during the day. It can vary from morning to evening because I know this. I've done it myself, so I know. And so, especially when you're dealing with something like obesity, it can be a little difficult because it may make you a little despondent. You might just feel that, well, I barely ate something and I've just gained this much weight. What's going on? So probably checking it weekly is it's a good idea. That's I wouldn't say daily, because even daily the weight changes.
I was crazy, man. I was checking it morning, noon, and night. So I'm joined, ladies and gentlemen, with my friend Dr. Avishkar. You can find him at decodingobesity.com. He is a board certified obesity doctor, and as well, you also are certified in a couple other disciplines, doctor.
Correct. Yes. So I'm both certified in internal medicine, in obesity medicine, and in lifestyle medicine.
Lifestyle medicine, obesity medicine, and internal medicine. So we got the real deal on the show tonight, and so thankful for you. We talked about this in the, I guess you call it the green room, backstage. We talked about diet versus exercise. Now, I've had some health gym rats on my show, doctor, so you got to tread lightly, okay? I don't want to, they might be potential sponsors. I don't want to make them upset, but I wanted to hear it from Dr. Avishkar. I've been waiting to get him on this show because I heard someone say you cannot exercise your way out of a bad eating lifestyle. So I wanted to get it from the doctor himself and what your experience and research has shown.
Well, you cannot outrun the fork. You cannot outrun a bad diet. That's for sure. But having said that, in the same breath, I would say that I do not want to undermine exercise because of its health benefits.
Right.
It has great health benefits. So everybody should exercise. And actually, you know, I would want to point out over here, it's not just the exercise that's important. Mm-hmm. Because when we think about physical activity, we're usually talking about exercise, right? And that's going to be about half an hour, 1 hour in the gym or whatever. You're running, you're doing your exercise.
Right.
But what are you doing the rest of the day? So what's more important is most of the energy that you're going to actually burn is going to be your non-exercise activity. That is your physical activity that you're doing when you're not exercising.
Right.
So it's very important to keep yourself active throughout the day. That is, you know, walk out. Even if you're going to, say, your office, try to take a stroll, try to park your car further away from the office, try to take the stairs, try to keep yourself active, keep yourself moving all throughout the day, because that's going to increase your non-exercise activity. So that's going to keep you physically active throughout the day. And that's very important, even with regards to weight loss, with regards to exercise. The exercise certainly has a very, very important role in our, you know, in our lives, in our overall health. It has great, great impact on us. It improves, you know, it has effects on our depression rates. It does have some effect on, you know, our cardiovascular health, our, you know, obesity also to some extent, but not great. But if we talk purely in terms of modalities for obesity, purely in terms of modalities for obesity, the first thing we kind of focus on is the lifestyle, the diet part, and then comes the exercise. So they do go kind of together, but diet is much more important than exercise.
Well, let me ask you this, just from your experience, and you know, you've talked about your journey and how you've had to deal with it, even still, you know, we all do. I still do. I mean, I'm a former Marine, tough, lean, and mean, and I still at 46 am like, okay, if I don't put that fork down, I'm going to be looking like the Goodyear blimp. When you look at your diet and when you look at your exercise, which one is easier for you to stay committed to?
That's a good question. I would say it's probably the diet, because I still have to eat every day.
I'm going
to
get hungry.
So I have to make a conscious decision every time. So I would say probably the diet. And now what's happened is I've done it so many times over and over again. Now it just runs in the back of my mind. It's just almost kind of become subconscious about what I'm putting into my mouth and what's basically feeding my body. So yeah, now it's kind of gone to that level.
All right, I'm going to talk to you about another thing. And again, ladies and gentlemen, these are opinions that are discussed between the doctor and I. And if you have questions, you're more than welcome to ask them in the chat for our live audience. But again, we ask that you don't make any medical decisions based off of watching this show. You need to contact your medical physician to get further input. What is your thoughts, though, doctor? You can just consult with me. Just pretend like you're talking to me. What is your thoughts about fasting?
You know, I was thinking you're gonna ask me that question.
Did you know that you just knew we're so in tune, brother? You knew I was gonna ask you, right? Yeah. So give us your thoughts on fasting and how, because we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about obesity and we're talking about tackling this disease of obesity. So I've really picked the doctor's brain. He's so knowledgeable, ladies and gentlemen, that we've already asked him and pre-booked him to come back in the holiday season. We want to have him back to just get us straight for the holidays. But doctor, what's your thoughts on fasting and how that plays into maybe addressing obesity?
I think, so in my opinion, fasting is great. I've tried it. It works well for a lot of people. But it's also about understanding the science behind how fasting works. And it's also about how you're fasting. So, you know, there's this concept of clean fast versus dirty fast. When I talk about fast, it's always about a clean fast. That means you're not consuming any calories during your fasting phase. But there's science behind this. So I'm all in for, fasting. But having said that, it's important to understand that when you're fasting or when you're starting this intermittent fasting, if you have certain medical conditions, for example, diabetes, high blood pressure, this and that, make sure you consult your physician because your medications may need to be changed around. Mm-hmm. Your doses may need to be decreased. Something else may need to be changed around. So make sure you're consulting with your physician before going on any of this. And also the other thing is, again, just like with anything, it has to be something that you can do consistently and maintain for a long term.
Right.
So you can, cannot do.
Michelle just asked in the chat, she said intermittent versus longer ones. Are there pros to intermittent versus like, you know, someone's going to do, I'm going to do a 3-day total fast versus I'm going to do a 16-hour fast per day. Are there benefits to one or the other or the styles?
So, I don't think there's a lot of data out there to kind of compare the different types of fasts, 16-8 versus 24 versus, alternative fasting. What I can say is that there's a lot of data about alternate day fasting versus calorie reduced diet. So that's one of the fasts that is most widely studied. It's alternate day. So you were fasting one day and the next day you're eating regular and then you're decreasing your calories. So there's data on that. But comparing between the fasts I don't think there's data there. But having said that, again, so it's important to understand the science of fasting rather than, whether a 3-day fast is better than a 2-day fast or which is better than a 1-day fast or not.
Right, right.
So the science is basically about decreasing your insulin levels. The only way you can do it is either have a low carb diet, and that's the whole reason of a ketogenic diet or a low carb diet.
Right.
Or you can do it by fasting when you're not consuming anything. Right. So the goal is to kind of get into that state of ketosis, deplete your glycogen stores, get into the state of ketosis, because that will decrease the hunger signals. That'll also increase the fat burning and whatever. So it's about that. And it's also about finding the medium. Now, it may be different for different people. Some people may benefit just from a 16-hour fast. Some people may benefit from a 20-hour fast. Mm-hmm. There's this concept of one meal a day or two meals a day. Mm-hmm. It's really about finding what works for you and, being in consultation with your physician to see what's the right thing for you to do. But I would say, yeah, it's a good, powerful tool that people can use. It's not the end all be all. The way I look at all of this is that it's one of the modalities that we can use.
Right, Right. And I'm going to use, I'm adding that term, ladies and gentlemen, to my toolbox that he has used several times tonight so I could sound really educated like the doctor. Modalities. Y'all hear that? Yeah, I got to find a reason to say that to my kids. Listen, the modalities with y'all messy rooms, I don't know if that fits, but I'm going to try it anyway. So, you know, doctor, I know we're coming up close on the end of the show, but I do want to ask you a few more questions since I have you. And again, if my audience has any questions that you'd like us to ask Dr. Avishkar, please do so. He is a board certified medical doctor in obesity and what are the other two again?
Internal medicine and lifestyle medicine.
Internal medicine and lifestyle medicine. That's what I get for not having my notes in front of me, doctor. But you can find him at decodingobesity.com. And doctor, he and I connected so well when we met for the first time. You know, it's something when I have pre-interviews on this show, it's basically meeting a stranger. And we talked and it was just like, man, I'm just talking to a good friend. And it's so cool because, you know, Dr. Avishkar has committed his life to studying the science behind helping people get healthy. And, you know, some of the science behind why people are unhealthy. So I've got a question for you. And I've seen this. I've been a part of way back in the days when I was in an office somewhere. Those days seem like a long time ago, right? We used to do this thing, and this is years ago, but we used to do this thing, called, you know, like a Biggest Loser kind of thing. And it seemed like the guys always lost weight faster than the girls. It did the ladies. It just seemed like that was the case. So talk to us, because today is International Women's Day. So we gotta be right. We gotta be right, doctor. Talk to us and help us and help maybe even some of our ladies and men in the audience understand the difference in genetics and how we're made and the difference between men losing weight. Why does it seem like when I get on a diet kick, I lose 2 pounds a day and a lady will get on a diet kick and she'll lose 2 pounds a month? Can you explain that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And, you know, there is obviously a difference between men and women, right? And that's why there's a difference between the cutoffs for fat percentage, right? So it's 25% for men, it's lower for men, it's higher for women. Mm-hmm. So they naturally have a higher percentage of body fat. A lot of the body fat is also, it's important to understand when we're talking about obesity, we're talking about the visceral fat. We're not talking about the subcutaneous fat that's on the thighs, that's on the butts. We're not talking about the fat there. Right. We're talking about really the internal fat. That's the bad fat. So yeah, there is a difference. And a lot of times women will see that they lose inches more than they lose the weight. Mm-hmm. That can happen. I honestly don't know the exact science as to why women don't lose weight as fast as men do. But having said that, if you're in that, you know, severe obesity category, losing the weight is important. And in that category, I don't know how well this question would apply, because mm-hmm. there are a lot of other modalities we can help patients with who are in, you know, the obesity category or the severely obese category,
right,
to kind of help them lose the weight.
Okay, that's good. My friend and co-host Mike, he says, "Doctor, please speak on the importance. Speak on the importance of A1C for diabetics."
Oh yeah, it's a very important measure we use all the time for basically measuring diabetes. And what it is actually, whenever we are eating something, our red blood cells get a glycated hemoglobin. What happens is the glucose attaches to the hemoglobin molecules, and that's what the HbA1c is. It's the measure of the glycated hemoglobin. So what it gives us is an average of your sugar control over the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so it's a long-term. So if somebody comes to me and they are, for example, using their insulin right, and their doctor's appointment is coming up, and they come to me and they come in with pristine blood sugar levels in the last week, right? But their A1C is off the charts. I already know that in the last 3 months, they've not really done something right, or it's probably the medicine has not worked right for them, or they've tweaked something around, or their diet is not working. So that gives me an idea of the long-term control of diabetes versus just your finger stick sugar checks.
Ah, very good. I can say this, being someone that is what's the one where you, I don't know what type of diabetes I am. I'm definitely on the low end of very, 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 very mild. But I also struggle with high blood pressure. And what I did was I I've done it over the past month or so that I've really been very conscious about my diet. And I watched really, literally every day when I take my blood pressure, when I'm eating right, my blood pressure is so much different than when I was eating crazy. So diet does, I mean, like I was at doctor, I was at almost 180 over like 130, you know. Wow. What I mean? And they were like, King, you need to go to the doctor, brother. You need to go to the ER. You don't need to go to the doctor. And when I started, when I changed, got rid of the salt, my wife threw everything salty away in the house. I was so mad. How do you salt spinach, you know? But she got rid of all of those, and I was very, very conscious about the what I was putting in this mouth. I saw, now I'm down. I just took my blood pressure just the other day. It's like 111 over 98. And, you know, that's all attributed to, I mean, I'm not out there running every day like my good friend Henry Patterson, who's going to be on the show, who's ran every day since COVID started. I'm going to have him on to talk about his daily COVID run. It's amazing. I'm not that guy. I'm not that machine. But I, one thing that I feel like is probably the easier of the two, if you're talking about exercising and bulking up in the gym, or, you know, seeing how what you put in your mouth can regulate your life. I found that the diet and the change, not let's come up with a new term instead of diet, because everybody runs from that. Just the change in the way of eating.
Right.
It's my lifestyle change. That's correct, doctor. And I got 10 bags of spinach in my refrigerator, and I eat spinach with almost every meal now, no matter what it is. And I just saw that it went from 160 to 150 to 140. And I was just like, wow, this whole way of eating thing really is important. And so here we are in the last 2 minutes, doctor. I can't believe that our time has flown by. Can you believe our time has
Me
flown
neither.
By, doctor?
No, yeah.
It's just like, man, we're just getting started, brother.
I know.
But what I would ask, because the music is coming on and our sponsors will get all upset if I go over. I'm just teasing. No, they won't. They love us. I would like for you to give a word of encouragement to all of our people out there listening to the show, because there are people that are no doubt saying, well, I've tried this, I've tried that, I'm just struggling. I really want to get my life in a better posture. I want to live longer. I want to be healthier. So, doctor, because you are so specialized, this is your niche, this is your gifting, please speak to our audience in general and give us a word of encouragement about our health and wellness as it pertains to avoiding obesity.
Well, I think it's important to understand that obesity is a disease, and that's the first thing to recognize. So it's not just about self-blame, and it's not just about blaming anybody for that matter. I think when you start blaming something or somebody for something, you're just starting to create those walls, invisible walls in front of you. The way I look at it is you need to transition to taking responsibility for the body that you've been given. And once you start taking that responsibility for the body that you've been given, those walls disappear. And it's just about making your physical self better. And how you can do it is by reaching out to physicians, reaching out to obesity specialists, kind of some, if you need some mindset work, reaching out to somebody who can help you with that. So it's really about kind of understanding what's going on within your body to help you get better by taking responsibility for yourself.
Wow, so powerful. Taking responsibility for the body that you have been given. I'm glad we record these episodes. My friend, Dr. Avishkar Sabha.
You'll get it someday.
I tried, doctor. I was trying to do you good, man. I totally blew it again. But you can find him at decodingobesity.com. Dr. Avishkar is a board certified physician in obesity and internal medicine, and one other,
lifestyle medicine.
So Dr. Avishkar is a well-traveled physician, well-respected, highly sought after. And so we were really, really, really blessed to sneak him in on this show. And since we got him, we said, okay, now you're part of the family. We got to have you back. We thank you so much, Dr. Avishkar, for spending time with our Impacting Life 24/7 Nation. And you have spoken some words of life to all of us. We believe that, you know, if you just touch one person, if you have just reached one person tonight that says, you know what, I'm going to try again in the morning. You can't go on and say, hey, I'm going to lose 75 pounds this year. Just start over in the morning, right, doctor? Would you say that is a good approach?
I would say that. I think you need to take baby steps.
Take baby steps. Small steps, great distances, my man Good ET says. So anyway, listen, Dr. Avishkar, I will be sending you a link to get you back on the show. You'll be one of our regulars on the show. But we can't have you too much because people will be getting mad at us then, you know what I mean? You'll be telling Greg that he can't eat M&Ms, you know? So, again, Dr. Avishkar, you can find him at decodingobesity.com. And we really, really thank you, doctor, for being with us. Thank you so much for sharing the night with us, doctor.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we'll be in touch. We'll have you back again soon,
all right,
okay?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, thank you so much. So that was Dr. Avishkar, and I feel so bad that I couldn't pronounce his last name. Subharo. S-A-B-H-A-R-W-A-L. Subharo. Dr. Avishkar Subharo. Maybe I got it after the guy left. Great guy. Great doctor. Super smart and super down to earth, man. I mean, some of the things that he told us, ladies and gentlemen, is probably stuff that we just need to now apply. I love the idea about fasting. I try to include that into my regimen. I need to probably do it a little more. And here's what I guess the thing is that when you talk about fasting or whatever, is that you can't come off of that fast and eat all the bad stuff. You know, justifying eating it because, well, I haven't eaten in 16 hours. But yeah, but you can't come off and eat Doritos and dip and chips and stuff. So some of that is designed for you to regulate and stay below the threshold. So if you eat all that bad stuff after your fast, then your fast was for nothing. You just starved yourself. Right? I think I'm telling the truth. Thank you so much, Michelle. We really appreciate you, one of our gold sponsors. And so I think again, scientifically looking at things like this is very, very important. It's very important for us to understand our bodies. And he said one of the most profound statements that I've heard in quite some time. He said, being responsible for the body that you were given. I've got coming up tomorrow night, Tuesday, March 9th, I got Adrian Delgado, and she's going to be with us, and we're going to be talking about a whole host of things. And she teaches people to integrate simple nutrition practices into their busy lifestyles. So I think I put these two folks together on purpose because I wanted her to follow up with the doctor. You know, the doctor talks about doctors talking about obesity, and Miss Delgado is going to talk to us and help us understand how to navigate a busy lifestyle and still eat okay. And she's written a book on it. She's a registered licensed dietitian, so it's going to be a great show again tomorrow. I think we're in the health mode this week. She's at bodymatrixpa.com. So again, thank you, Dr. Avishkar Subharo. I am the worst at names. When I do live events, I go to a school, a student will tell me, I'm like, what's your name? He'll come up on the stage with me, what's your name? And he'll say, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, tell me your name again. So please charge it to my head and not to my heart. I just can't remember. Anyway, again, we will be back tomorrow night in the High Definition Studios. Listen, if you'd like to become a sponsor, maybe you'd like to join folks like Michelle Perry, who's a gold sponsor. We've got three levels. We got a silver sponsorship, which is $1 a month, which helps us with our monthly expenses associated with running Impacting Life 24/7. And there are quite a bit of expenses. The features that we have, the technology that we use, the systems that we run, all to provide a high-quality show for our guests and our listeners. The $5 a month helps us with that, but it also gives you an opportunity to have a commercial on a podcast that is reaching throughout the country and around the world. Imagine that. So every person that is a gold sponsor, we give them a commercial every show for as long as they're a sponsor. And that's just $5 a month. And then $15 a month helps us takes our GRIND program, G-R-I-N-D. It's an acronym that we give to at-risk youth throughout the country. And our goal is to try to give it to them for free, because a lot of times school districts can't have us based off of fees and such as that. And so we want to just say, man, it won't cost you anything. We're going to come and train your at-risk students how to grind. And how to get in gear. So both of those trainings are available. And that's really what our $15 a month sponsors do. They help us help the next generation. So we're very, very thankful for everyone that participates in that. If you'd like to participate, it's just clkingspeaker.com. That's clkingspeaker.com. So enjoy doing a live show. And we'll be having some more guest hosting by Mr. Black, so that way I can eventually get up out the chair in the summertime and go on vacation or things of that nature. But I really appreciate the audience's participation. I appreciate our podcast listeners. Man, we're seeing so much growth in our podcast. I mean, like 52% of our downloads are on Apple. I think 30-something percent are on Podbean. And then the rest all throughout the other platforms that we're on. I think we're on 12 or 13 different other additional platforms. So we're very, very pleased with what we're seeing. We do it live. We do it on YouTube. We do it on all the podcast platforms. And we're just seeing this thing steadily grow. Every episode, it's just like it's growing, it's moving. And we want y'all to come along with us. Join the Impacting Life 24/7 family. Thank you again for being a part of what we got going on tonight. We had Dr. Avishkar, and he did such a great job. I will see you back here tomorrow night, Impacting Life 24/7 at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Miss Delgado. We'll be talking about, again, eating healthy. Talk to you soon.